And joining us on the Book Club on Perspectives today is Christopher Fulton. Christopher is the author of the book, The Inheritance, Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination. Chris, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis. My pleasure for being here.
So first of all, let's talk a little bit about yourself. You grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, come from a strong family background, involved in military. Annapolis, that was one of your plans to go to Annapolis. That changed later, and your career took off in a different way. Tell us a little bit about you growing up.
Well, I grew up, like you said, just outside the district and up and down the East Coast, and basically my slated idea was to go into Annapolis and become a military officer, career officer. But I followed my father's idea and went ahead and became a commercial construction success up in British Vancouver, Canada, and was building high-rise towers up there, done fairly well with that.
Now, I want to take a little bit and just read the prologue in the book, and then we'll take off from there. It says, "Ask not, November 22nd, 1963. Everyone's efforts were useless. President John F. Kennedy was dead. Mr. O.P. Wright, the head of Parkland's hospital security, was given a bullet. He placed it in his pocket. Soon after, he was given a gold wristwatch. He carefully wrapped it in his handkerchief. The bullet was the foundation of the biggest lie in modern history, and the watch was secretly used to save us all from nuclear war." That's the prologue to the book, and from there, the book is reads like a novel, so it's not like it has a bunch of data, facts, anything like that. It has some very important information and pictures, but it reads like a novel. And I just want to ask a little bit about, there are many people out there who have heard conspiracies about the JFK assassination. They've watched movies, they've watched documentaries, etc. This book takes a little bit of a different turn because of what you inherited, as the book implies. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, Evelyn Lincoln, who was President Kennedy's personal secretary.
Well, Evelyn Lincoln was dedicated to President Kennedy for 12 years and was the closest person to him, other than his brother. And she was the one that really was in charge and came into possession of all the materials that Robert Kennedy had secured in the following the assassination of President Kennedy out of the White House. These materials were secured by him, and there was great infighting going on between himself and the Johnson administration and, of course, the FBI. And the infighting was basically over the story that was going to be procured for the American public and to how we were going to stay out of war with Russia and of course, the foundation that was laid out by the intelligence services and how we were going to resolve those issues. So she was the one, really, that ultimately came into possession of all this, and then ultimately that's how it came into my possession. I am in no way consider myself a researcher or a person of a great note of a writing ability. What I am is a victim of the JFK's assassination coup that took place in the United States. And we came into this vast amount of evidence that basically changes the official story. And then the book is a journey of what it was like to go through that process from the inside, trying to have the best intentions and trying to do what we could along this path to get this information to the American public and what ultimately happened.
So did Robert Kennedy give the information that he had to Evelyn Lincoln, or is this something that Miss Lincoln already had?
Evelyn Lincoln was given these materials to secure them when there was infighting between Robert Kennedy and the Justice Department and, of course, the Johnson administration themselves and the government agencies that were looking to secure this material and classify it. Confiscated and classified that would not change the official story. And of course, Robert Kennedy was very clever as the Attorney General. How he proceeded in this, he took it upon himself to give out the rights, title, and interest to everything that the government had currently had in their possession, but to not give out the right, title, and interest to what he had secured himself for his own private investigation into his brother's murder, which they were not aware of totally the amount of materials that he had secured, and to keep it protected, he gave that to Evelyn Lincoln for her possession while he was continuing to try to steer the course of the country. And then, of course, in 1968, when he decided to run for the presidency, he made sure that Evelyn Lincoln promised him that she would keep this secure and keep it secret if he did not make it, if he died in this endeavor, which he was fully aware that that was a possibility, that these materials stay secured until such a time to her death.
So what happens, because as you mentioned in the book, that Robert Kennedy was trying to avert a World War III situation with Russia and the Cold War, everything that was going on. You write in your book that Robert Kennedy intended to release all this information and talk to the country once he got elected president, because everybody assumed that he was going to be the nominee for the Democratic Party and that he would probably get elected. But as we all know, he was gunned down by an assassin's bullet, died in June of 1968. What were the plans that when you talk about averting a World War III, can you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, it's complicated, but some of the initial ideas for the agency was set up that they would have actually a false flag operation that would shoot at President Kennedy and allow the American public to take a stand that they had to invade Cuba and acknowledge that was a necessity, because that was the plan on board for the Pentagon and the intelligence services. It was an absolute necessity, and they felt that President Kennedy and his brother were very weak on communism and very weak on all these matters. And they were basically, and it was infighting. There was a war going on between that executive period and the other intelligence and Pentagon services. So basically, they labeled the Kennedy brothers a national security concern. And when President Kennedy was assassinated, we were about 9 days away from major reforms that President Kennedy was putting into force and Robert Kennedy putting into force that would have changed the history of the United States and the world. And in those reforms, we would have had the Secret Service not solely responsible for the president's protection. Bobby Kennedy was very concerned about this and was going to take it upon himself to protect his brother in any way he could. We would have had a free, democratically elected Cuba, one way or the other, with the Cold War would have resolved. We would have had cooperation on the missile concerns and possibly even a detente on all of this. But that, of course, did not happen. And when he was killed, the Russians went to a high alert and were ready for somebody to lob a missile at them from the Pentagon. Now, they were aware that there was plans coming from the Pentagon after World War II and, of course, crossed the president's desk as a first strike at Moscow and to hit China, take out the Russian or the communist concern before the missile gap caught up. And that was an inevitable, according to the intelligence services. So President Kennedy was forced into a position to make a decision on this. He decided that looking at the numbers of 42 million civilians dead, even on a first strike, that was unacceptable, that we weren't going to operate in that way in the world. We were going to be the light, the beacon of the world, of peace, and we were going to go directly to the sources and communicate this directly and resolve these issues. We weren't going to let this get out of hand, these weapons of mass destruction, and to take the resolve in this way. And of course, that was the chisel of one of many that had divided this presidency and caused President Kennedy's death and ultimately Robert Kennedy's death.
We're visiting with author Christopher Fulton. He is the author of the book, The Inheritance, Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination. As you led us and talk to us a little bit about the beginning and how you inherited this from Evelyn Lincoln, how did you come to play with this? Because from what I gather, I don't think Mr. and Mrs. Lincoln had any children. And so this was given to a friend of yours?
They did not have any children, and of course, her loyalty was proven many times and tested. Her mettle was tested, and she was extremely loyal to the President of the United States and to ultimately then to Robert Kennedy. But she needed to pass these materials along at some point in her, you know, towards the end of her life, and she had chosen a friend of mine, a close friend of mine, that had been in the military as a curator type position, who was not connected in any way to the intelligence services or the things that were happening and politically. And so she chose him to be the person to receive these materials because she did not want them classified away from the American public or destroyed. And that's exactly what they would have been done immediately if they'd transferred on that happenstance. But what they turned out to be is that there was legal transfer to him, which caused a great rift. The CIA was contacted about this. The president was notified. And, of course, they all didn't know exactly what materials were involved. But they did know that there were Robert Kennedy materials that were CERN, and they wanted those ultimately to be disclosed and then to be reviewed and classified. We were trying to figure out a way to go around that so that we could get to the American people with this, but ultimately JFK Jr. got involved with me, and Ronald Reagan got involved with my friend, and we tried to negotiate this, but it did not work out well for any of us.
Let's go back a little bit and talk about you reaching out to John Kennedy Jr.
Well, ultimately, I had reached out to Caroline Kennedy in New York. This was 1996, and I said, well, ultimately, the Kennedy family should be the ones responsible for this and should be the ones to make these decisions, not me. So So I contacted her through Sotheby's in 1996, through Warren P. Whiteman Jr., who was the VP there. They had handled the Jackie Onassis sale, and I said, I'd like to set this up so that we can get a private sale back to the Kennedy family so that it wouldn't be construed as a blackmail situation or a national security concern. They set up a meeting. Caroline Kennedy came into their New York office immediately, sat down for an hour, reviewed this in private, and said, this is such a concern. I need to speak with my uncle about this, Ted Kennedy. I don't want to discuss this any further. So nothing was discussed with me. I had no direction on this, and we had to proceed from there. And as Donald Trump got involved with us in 1997, gave us a platform to start discussing this with the American public, JFK Jr. had contacted me initially through his lawyers and the Clinton lawyers, which I had contact through him, through Jacques Lowe. And he was very interested in pursuing this. He basically was giving me no end game other than the fact that he wanted this evidence directly. It was such a concern to him that and that he had a great interest in who killed his father and who had killed his uncle and having the evidence in hand for that purpose. He was going to share this with the American people through George Magazine. It wouldn't have been censored at some point in some time. Now, it was very disheartening to me to find out that he had died when I was in prison being interrogated about all of this without my constitutional rights and without counsel and under 50-year threat, my family being threatened. So it was a very, very sad day for me to hear about this, because the country could have taken a great change if he'd been able to pursue that.
At what point, Christopher, did the government step in and say, Mr. Fulton, you're not supposed to have these, so we're going to, as you write in your book, you were arrested and you were placed in prison?
They had contacted initially the several other people before me and made legal threats through letters to say that you would be persecuted, prosecuted, the great steps taken. And of course, national security, these materials that we were in possession of were declared to be a national security issue in early 98 through the Office of Oversight Security Office of the AARB. I was compelled to testify under subpoena issued by the Justice Department and to testify to them, not only them, but the AARB. But the items were such a concern that the Justice Department made a decision that I was not going to testify and there was going to be a sealed warrant and indictment for my arrest while I was in British Columbia. They never approached me and gave me any options on this. My friend did sign private agreements with the Justice Department and the Kennedy family in regards to this, which were all secret. And a lot of materials were confiscated from him by the FBI that were very imperative to understanding the assassination of President Kennedy, and they've been classified. I wound up with the Oval Office recordings that I was the first person to review those secret recordings that President Kennedy made in 62, 63. And I was also in possession of the closest physical evidence to the frontal head wound that happened in Dallas. So they took such a concern with me, the fact that I was out of the country and they weren't going to share this in any way with a foreign government, weren't going to get their hands caught in the cookie jar on this, that they issued a sealed warrant and indictment for me. And then I didn't know anything until I was pulled in and put through the gamut of the national security state. I was treated as an enemy of the United States, flown on federal aircraft across the country and left in a military coffin for a month and placed in places of maximum security where people were beaten and died. So I was put under an extreme gamut of situations and made to compel getting me into to testify about this. Again, it was all classified at this point, but I was never given the situation beforehand to be spoken to about this by them. They thought it was such an urgent concern before the Bush election that they had to bring me in as a high-value debrief, and that's what they did.
And what about your friend? Tell us a little bit about where was he during all of this when you were in prison and when you were being questioned by the government?
Well, he had obviously signed secret agreements or private agreements with Justice already, which compelled him. They had him under lock and key, and then, of course, he had signed agreements with the Kennedys. But obviously that wasn't enough. The Kennedys had still hounded him, and the FBI was still hounding him, and basically he perished. He died, which is a lot of people that were involved directly in this slice of the story did not make it. My attorney that had very important information, the affidavits that I had sent to the Clintons and the Attorney General and their responses to the situation while I was in prison. He perished. He died. Robert White died. JFK Jr. died. A gamut of people passed away that were involved in this slice. Now, I didn't want to be the one to do this. I went to federal prison for many years over this. But when I survived it, and obviously I sat on it for a number of 20 years, but the fact of the matter is that because I am mentioned in the National Archives under this investigation, I was really hoping that my files or some of this information would come out to the American public, released through President Trump. unfortunately, that we did it did not. And I did a 30-day investigation at the National Archives and found out that the files are actually missing. They've been pulled. We don't know what agency or even the president had pulled them, but they are gone, and they had admitted to that fact. I figured, well, there's no other way that this is going to get to the American people unless I write a book about it.
We're visiting with Christopher Fulton. Christopher is the author of the book, The Inheritance, Poison Fruit of JFK's Assassination. When you were in prison, there have been a lot of books, as I mentioned, and movies, documentaries about various conspiracies that surround the JFK assassination. And, of course, we hear about Lee Harvey Oswald being a patsy, the fact that the CIA was involved, the mafia was involved, the Russian government was involved, Cuba was involved. So we have a lot of those conspiracies and theories circling the area. When you came across these papers and this evidence that Ms. Lincoln passed on to you, was there something that stood out, Christopher, that changes what some of the other documentaries and movies are based upon?
Well, of course, there were many things to that effect. I was surprised to see many things, including how scared Jackie Kennedy was, even as early as 62, the falling out of the CIA with her husband, and that they figured they were going to get shot at or have an assassination attempt. And the fact that the operations, the ongoing operations with the CIA, and I mean, when you're looking at someone like Jim Garrison, he had stumbled on their operations in New Orleans, and they just didn't want that uncovered. They don't want all their dirty laundry handed out there. So, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald was involved in this, but he wasn't involved in the way people think he was, and he should not be the main focus of this situation. Again, these operations, these false flag operations and other operations around the world are put out for purpose, and they don't want to launder that information. So they do the best they can to cover it or classify it, whether it's directly related to the assassination of President Kennedy or whether it's not. So Robert Kennedy did his investigation into this and had come to the conclusion that it was a domestic coup and it was for purpose and to steal it, the power of the United States was stolen and transferred. Now, the Russian government, when they talked to me, I was actually debriefed on this in the Kremlin by the head of the intelligence there, who was running for their presidency, General Alexander Levitt, who was aware that I had received these materials along with Robert White and wanted me to release these through Russia without censorship. Of course, I declined, and I didn't even acknowledge that I had them in my possession, and I left Russia. But at the same time, you understand from their position that they wanted this information out. They didn't want to be blamed for this or get their somebody to out of the Pentagon lob some missiles at them or anything else over this. And they put a lot of pressure on the Johnson administration in efforts to the point where Johnson had issued the Warren Commission to come out more or less not for the American public to be satisfied, but it really showed that the Russian government was off the hook. There's so many instances in this whole history of the United States that's covert and colluded to the point that you ask most Americans why President Kennedy died or why RFK had died, and they don't even have an understanding of this. And I think it's very important that we understand this because our idealism of who we were and where we were going that was so critical has been lost. And where we are now is a direct result of that assassination or those ongoing political assassinations that occurred following President Kennedy's death.
So you just told us that you ended up in Russia and at the Kremlin. And our listeners might wonder, okay, what happened, Christopher? How did you end up in the Kremlin?
Well, I had been doing high-rise tower construction, as I mentioned earlier, and they invited me to go to Russia to help their infrastructure there quite early for oil production and to help the country and get their flats up to American specs so that these people could come in and buy. But to make a very long story short, I went under the guise of that. As I was doing that job, I was invited to go to the Kremlin and meet an individual that I thought was just someone who wanted to speak to me as an American contractor. The person turned out to be General Levitt, and he was informing me that he was aware that these materials had transferred and what our intentions were, what we were going to do with them. He thought the American government would not give us any good feelings on this, and that if we wanted to acknowledge the real truth of the assassination, or part of the real truth anyway, that we would have free access through him to do that through Russia. Now, of course, I wasn't going to take him up on that, or wasn't going to discuss these matters with the head of Russian intelligence or the head of the Russian army in Moscow. So I excused myself and came back to the United States immediately. But of course, the Justice Department debriefed me on all of that. Wanted to know if I was working for the Russians. Of course, I was not. I was under a 50-year threat of imprisonment. If I had lied to the FBI or their investigation, of course, the CIA was involved in a lot of this too, I would have been in prison for 50 years and be there as we speak. But I told the truth, and they investigated it and realized that this was an unfortunate series of events, and they desperately needed to get control of these materials, so they would not be released because they were their national security concerns.
We're visiting with Christopher Fulton. Christopher is the author of the book, The Inheritance, Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination. Listeners might wonder, Christopher, why did you wait until now to publish a book?
It was, let me just say that it was a devastating process to be put through the Justice Department, the prison systems, and the things that I went through. Nothing in my life had prepared me for that kind of experience, and watching people die and many things that it had changed me as a person. It took a number of years for me to even operate on a even keel. I still work on that every day. But barring that, I feared for the safety of my remaining family and everything else. So it took me a long time to come to the conclusion that I didn't want to die with this story. I didn't want it to go out without addressing this. And I certainly felt an obligation to the people that had perished, including my mother, who was issued a subpoena to testify against me and to help push the agenda for me to open up. They pressured her to an extent that she had a stroke and died. So I felt an obligation to my mother. I felt an obligation to JFK Jr. I felt an obligation to my attorney. I felt an obligation to President Kennedy and, of course, Robert Kennedy, who gave their lives, knowledgeably gave their lives for the betterment of the United States and the world. And I felt an obligation, again, to people of the United States. It was important for me to try to share this story the best way I could and get it out.
When we watch documentaries or read books about the JFK assassination, there are a lot of times where we say that there is a missing bullet, a missing angle, a missing picture, etc. But what we've learned also is that at one point, President Kennedy's brain was missing and that only Robert Kennedy knew where it was. But as I read at the beginning of the book, there is also that bullet and the watch that is missing. And this is a watch that was given to the president by his wife that morning. But that watch has failed to come up anywhere. Why is that watch important in all of this?
Good question. The watch is critical in many ways because it shows complicity of Lyndon Johnson and the agents in the Secret Service who had removed anything personal from the president that could stop or alter a bullet from hitting him and killing him in Dallas. The watch was given to him at the last moment as he hit Love Field. He had actually, the last thing he wrote to when he was coming in was a government reform. We are going forward with this, which was a coded message that he was going to put at the trademark speech. That, of course, people don't know about that. But he was in contact behind channels to Khrushchev and other individuals and through people that he trusted. And he was trying desperately to change and alter the course of the United States for the betterment of the world. It was a battle. There was no two ways about it. It was an infighting battle. There was money coming, bribery money coming out of Texas. There was money that was President Kennedy was using secret to be raised to grease the wheels for the betterment of the world. It's a very long story. But the watch itself, to answer your question, ballistically allowed Robert Kennedy to acknowledge the fact that there was a frontal impact shot, an explosive round, a very specific explosive round, military round, that hit him on the lower front right temple. The evidence on the watch actually showed direction of where the round had come from, and there was other material that I did not discuss in the book that has not been shared with the American public that also confirms that specific ballistic ammunition, including his shirt and other things. But there was also a piece that hit the ricocheted on the back or came off the back of the watch itself. But Robert Kennedy had used that information for good. He wasn't primarily concerned with, you know, who's the individual specific name that pulled the trigger, but why this happened, who made this happen, what was it done, what purposes of this was for, and what the direction was of the country, where it was going. And to his great credit, while he was grieving the loss of his brother, which was overwhelming, obviously overwhelming, they were on a path together to try and to make great change. He needed to keep that peaceful resolve and to acknowledge the fact that his brother's loss meant something and to stay in the game. So he made agreements with the Johnson administration. He capitulated. It hurt him greatly to do so, but he knew that he had to take power back in the United States and to course correct back where his brother had put us on, and he paid that with his life.
There, as you mentioned in the book, hundreds of thousands of documents that you gained access to, and some other material evidence. It must have been difficult for you and your editors to sort through all this and be able to just say, this is all we could use.
Well, that's also a very insightful question. I'll tell you this. When I left prison, I had very little in the way of what was left. I had fought for over a year in a maximum security facility at my great peril and my family's great peril to keep the recordings in my possession. I had federal-issued orders to comply and to put those to not destroy those recordings and to put them into the Fourth Circuit Federal Court for their classification. But I fought very, very hard against that, and at the end of the day, the Justice Department felt so compelled to get me in there to testify that they overruled the CIA and said, okay, we got to get him in here now, and we're going to give him an immunity clause on those recordings and the other information, the national security information that he's been exposed to, just to get him in here to comply. We've got a 50-year hold on him. Let's bring him in. So that's what I did to do that. But the materials, when I left prison, I had very little as far as that's concerned. Of course, the tapes, they'd make an attempt to get the tapes covertly at one point, and they failed. But I was lucky enough during a situation that happened not too long ago where one lawyer said, we have to have some things for Homeland Security. So he was able to contact the attorney that had worked on the behalf of defense in Washington. And that attorney was so scared to destroy the files. He was ordered to destroy the files, but he did not do it. So that case file, he said, I'm going to send you the whole case file. I don't want it. I want to send it to you. So he sent it from one attorney to another attorney, and I was lucky enough to get some of those materials. And then, of course, what was left of that, I tried to share some of that with the publisher. Of course, the publisher can't afford to put, there's many thousands of documents. But we put in some things that at least gave a foundation of what we were looking at as a story.
We've been visiting with Christopher Fulton. Christopher is the author of The Inheritance, Poison Fruit of JFK's Assassination. Christopher, for the benefit of our listeners, there might be some places on the internet that they can go to find out more about your book and perhaps links to some of the other information that we did not touch base upon. Is there a certain website that people should go to?
Well, of course, they can buy the book on Amazon. It's available there. But you can go to CM Fulton. That's cmfulton.com. And on that website, you can see a couple videos, and you can see some of the information that's in the Justice Department file, that some of it's in the book. And you can get an idea of the scope of some of this. And of course, I encourage you just to read the story to get some of the information or a slice of this puzzle that's haunted the nation for so long. At least you can get a foundation of what I experienced from this as an insider and behind the scenes. You know, I dealt with the Justice Department, the FBI, the CIA, the White House, the Clintons, the Donald Trump, Ronald Reagan, the Kennedy family members, JFK Jr., Caroline Kennedy, and then, of course, the Russian side, big-time private, big-time attorneys that were involved in so many aspects of our country, our nation's decisions that are utilized through these very powerful attorneys that operate. And, of course, those attorneys were very, very prominent in my case. So if you're interested in that, I encourage you to get that and to check that out, because a lot of what we are seeing today, a lot of the infighting that we're seeing and the divisions that we're seeing and the purposes that we're seeing are very much what President Kennedy was trying to stop. And it really goes back to the foundation of where we went off track and where we are today.
Well, Christopher, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. We've been visiting with Christopher Fulton. He is the author of The Inheritance, Poison Fruit of JFK's Assassination. Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you, Louis.
I want to remind you the views expressed are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KTEP. The Book Club on Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Gerardo Moreno. We had help from Robert Lopez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.